And hi, folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome to Hoops HD, the Bracket Racket, our weekly college basketball show on Sunday. And finally, guys, we have some college basketball to talk about, games that have actually been played. An exciting first week of college basketball. And a lot to talk about that we're going to cover here in this next hour. Looking forward to it. If you would like to participate, you can tweet us at HoopsHD on Twitter, or you can just leave a comment on the YouTube page, and we'll put that up during the show and take a look at your comments. And we'd be happy to take any questions or comments you have about college basketball, and please tell your friends they should be tuning in and watching us or listening in if you're following us along on the podcast. Kyle Lamb joining us on the show tonight. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm actually dedicating tonight's broadcast to our Kentucky fan friends out there, and I'm going to pimp them from number one all year. Kentucky was just the Cats were unbeatable the first couple nights of the season, so go Kentucky. And
have you lost your mind?
I'm a Cat fan.
I love how he's doing that, wearing a Carolina blue colored T-shirt too. That's nicely done. We've actually got some Kentucky news that I'm looking forward to talking about, so we'll come around to that in just a second. David Griggs, who you just heard also on the show. David, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing okay, I guess. I mean, it was kind of a rough weekend, but nothing some ointment and a little penicillin can't fix.
Life is difficult as a shark, without question. But
yes.
Anyway. So let's tackle some of the pressing issues of college basketball. And again, if you've got comments or questions, please hit us up on Twitter or hit us up on the YouTube page itself, as there's a lot to go over. And guys, first off, I want to cover the little, it's not really a controversy, but it is kind of a humorous aside in my opinion. But there were comments that were made earlier this week by John Calipari, the coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, who are number one, I think, in most polls. And he was complaining about this early season matchup that he's got on Tuesday versus Michigan State. And he actually said the following: "The issue becomes playing teams like Michigan State this early is not fair for my team. It may be fair for everyone else, but it's no fair for my team. It's just not traditional in the sense everybody stays 4 years. So it's not fair when we walk in and everybody else is more experienced." Kyle, I mean, he's right. This is a travesty, isn't it? I mean, I think we should push this game back at least until March, like the 1st of March. So maybe we could, you know, have a more experienced Kentucky team going up against Michigan State. What do you think?
Boo-hoo, Calipari. If you don't like it, go recruit some seniors. How about that? You know, recruit four-year players if you don't like it. I don't even get me started. I'll never stop. I'm gonna channel my Lee Del Vecchio if I get going. So this is just this is an outrage. You know, shut the bleep up, Calipari. Go if you don't like it. Bring some players in with experience. Don't recruit one and done. How about that? Okay. You know, I'll be happy with that. Go ahead.
I think it's funny in a way because he's such a professional troll. I mean, he really, really is. You know, it's whether it was last year, like in the off season, with the whole IU Kentucky scheduling fiasco, where he said, you know, well, we're playing games against teams, on neutral sites because that's where we're going to win championships in March. That, you know, that sort of thing. It's just one thing after another with Calipari, and he does a very good job of drawing attention to himself, as opposed to having it on his team. And that's what most good coaches do when they have, you know, players that they want to kind of shield from the pressure of the spotlight. They try to bring the attention on themselves. But David, you know, it's still a dumb comment, and I think it's funny to me the overall response that he's gotten, which has been kind of what Kyle just gave, which has been kind of a universal derision.
I believe it or not, and I hope I don't get fired when I admit this, I am hearing this for the first time now, and I don't even know what to say to that. There is a tendency that at major programs and all programs to kind of ease into your season, not just in basketball, football, the revenue sports in particular, men's basketball and football. The others don't. Women's basketball, soccer, baseball, they kind of like to come out and play a big team early. And I think that that's good. Like, when you have, say you have a young team, what's going to pump them up in practice? we've got UNC Asheville coming up in our first game, or we have Michigan State coming up in our first game. I think you get much better practice in the 3-4 weeks leading into the season if you're opening with a big opponent. And secondly, the reward for playing a game like that outweighs the risk 1,000-1. Say Kentucky loses. What have they really lost? I mean, they're still in contention to be a tournament team. It doesn't really hurt them at all. All you can do when you play a game like that early is learn something about yourself and test yourself and maybe even get a win that impresses the committee. There is no downside. What a freak! I don't know. Hold on a second.
he's going to the beam already, folks.
Yeah, I mean, that is just a – I don't even – I'll have what he's drinking.
Well, I do – there is one thing I want to say on this, Kyle, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. You know, Calipari normally doesn't go out of his way to talk like this, which makes me think that maybe he's looking at this team in practice every day. He's looking at the expectations that his own fan base has for this team. And maybe they're not matching. Maybe he looks at his team right now and he's like, you know, this team is going to lose to Michigan State because they're not playing well together yet. I don't know this. I'm just guessing. But trying to soften the blow and give himself an excuse for this team coming out and losing to Michigan State, which they very well might because they really haven't been playing together very long at all. And that's about the only thing I can think of that would make sense in this situation.
You may be guessing, but you're a soothsayer, because, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly what he's doing. He's sandbagging. He's trying to it's de facto admission that his team isn't ready to meet expectations at this point in the year. And so he's basically just telling his fan base, you know, this is Kentucky. This is not fair to us. We are, you know, the birthright of college basketball. Everything that happens in the world, in the universe, should center around Kentucky basketball, and if it's not fair to us, then we need to do it differently. And so basically he's catering to his fan base, and all at the same time he's basically hinting that this team might lose on Tuesday, and they might be number one at the end of the year, but they're not ready to carry this number one banner right now.
We had a comment from Michael from the Bracket Crew. This is where Buckeye and Wolverine both agree. Tough blank, Calipari, if you don't like playing Michigan State in November, don't play them at all. So, look, again, I think this is a deflection on Calipari's part. He's done a good job. We just spent the first 8 minutes of the podcast talking about it. So hats off to you, Mr. Calipari, once again for grabbing the media spotlight. And I hope you're right. I hope that this game is immensely unfair to your team. That's probably what I'm looking the most forward to this week. So we'll see. Let's talk about some of the games that happened this past weekend, guys. A lot of big teams in action. Very few of them played each other, but we did have a few, so we'll start with that. Probably I don't know if this was the most surprising outcome necessarily, but it was a little bit of a surprise. Baylor didn't really host Colorado because the game was played in Dallas, but they looked very good in terms of what they were able to do against Colorado. And the Buffaloes started off the season with a loss and really looked poor, I thought, throughout. Baylor knocking off Colorado on Friday. Now today Colorado struggled again. They had a little bit of trouble in the game that they were playing against UT Martin, at least in the early going. David, are you at all concerned with the start to the season that Colorado's had, or is this just some expected early jitters?
Yes, I'm concerned, and we're going to need to go back and edit, I think, what I said about Colorado in the early podcast, because if somebody goes back and listens to that, they're going to think that I'm an idiot. I didn't think Baylor looked that good. I thought that was a very sloppy game. I mean, it was a typical November game, but still you expect more out of teams that I thought Baylor and Colorado were as good as. It was the last game of a triple header. And, I mean, there were dozens of people there, and the tens of thousands of people that weren't there really did miss a sloppy game.
Well, I mean, I will say this. Baylor, their offensive efficiency was very good. I mean, they were, I think, 111th, they had an efficiency of 1.11 in the game, which is fine. The shooting was okay. They shot 40% from three. They did what they wanted to do on offense. I agree it was somewhat sloppy, but But I chalk that up a lot to just Colorado's offense looking terrible. I mean, they were 2 for 19 from the 3-point line, and you know Spencer Dinwiddie, who everybody's been talking about, he ended up with 10 points, but he was 1 for 7 from the field. He got 5 of his points from the foul line. Just not a good game for him by any stretch of the imagination. So. Obviously it is early on in the year, but I would have expected Baylor to be the team that was playing like Colorado and vice versa. Because Kyle, like you and I were talking about, and the rest of us, I guess, on the email chain, this isn't that great of a Baylor team. Like, this Baylor team may not even make the NCAA tournament.
No, this is a Baylor team. It's good up front, like some of the Baylor teams have had in the past. I mean, Isaiah Austin. I mean, they're certainly not without athletes in the front court, but you know they don't have the guards that they've had even the past few years. I mean, it's a very very thin backcourt. It's a team that's gonna shoot you to death and make a lot of plays in the backcourt. So, this is a Baylor team that really 1.1 point per. Points per possession in a big game like this is pretty good number. I mean, that'll get it done every time. And, it's just, I think that's, it is one game for Colorado. Maybe they'll improve. I'm sure, there's five months to go until March. So, I'm sure they'll improve, but it's certainly not a good way to start the season against a mediocre offensive club.
Let's jump over and talk about another game that we saw on Friday, Connecticut and Maryland. This one coming from the Barclays Center. UConn looked like they were going to just, cruise to an easy victory in this game. They at halftime, they had a 12-point lead, and Maryland just slowly started to chip away in the second half, and then at the end it got really close, and Connecticut ends up with a double-digit victory that they only win the game by a point. Instead of the double digits that they probably should have won by. The defense, I think, is the biggest concern here for UConn. They scored at a 1.11 points per possession clip. They allowed Maryland to score at a 1.1 points per possession clip. Maryland shot the ball okay, but just a lot of free throws taken in this game, David. And, I think, again, early season game, did this game tell you more about UConn or about Maryland?
Well, UConn, I think, is really good. They really kind of let it slip away at the end in both teams. The last minute and a half or 2 minutes of that game, it was like watching a Chinese fire drill. I mean, really poor execution, lots of turnovers. Both teams had, chance after chance after chance and came up empty. And thankfully, the clock ran out for Connecticut and they were still ahead. But otherwise, Connecticut looked better for more of what I saw. Like, to be honest, when Connecticut opened it up to 15, 16 points, I was turning on other games. I'm a little embarrassed to say in KU Purdue what game I was watching, but because that one was kind of meaningless. But from what I saw, Connecticut looked really good, but it's just, my God, finish. And part of me is like, what were you doing the first 3 and 4 weeks of practice? Did no team work on what to do at the end of a game? And that, again, not nearly like Baylor, Colorado, but the last couple minutes, what a sloppy game.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, obviously this Maryland team harbors aspirations of the NCAA tournament. The UConn game, that was one of the few games that they really have where they might be able to try and impress some people, tournament selection committee-wise. You look at their schedule, I mean, they have Oregon State at home, they have Ohio State on the road in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They have Boston College on the road in a game that isn't looking quite as good now with what's happened with Boston College here over the first couple of contests. But did you like what you saw out of Maryland in this game? I mean, does this bode well for the future for them?
No, I think this was a case where, to be honest, I think that Dez Wells is a great playmaker, but the problem is he knows he's a great playmaker, and we saw at the end of the game he tried to be a hero. And I think if they work for a regular possession, maybe they get a game-winning shot. It's hard to say what would have happened, but he went way too early on that second-to-last possession. And I think this Maryland team is doesn't have enough firepower. I mean, after Wells, you've got really a dearth of scorers. I mean, they have no inside play whatsoever. I think it's just a case where UConn got up 15 or 16, and I honestly think they just stopped defending. And I think that, you add in the technical there by Shabazz Napier, and I just think that they really just kind of, I think they thought the game was over quicker than what it actually was. And in fairness, I did too. I turned the channel, and next thing I know, I come back, and they're only up 5. So I think we all made the same mistake. But, no, I really was not impressed with Maryland. I think that Connecticut, when they were bearing down in this game, they controlled it. And I think that Maryland is going to have some problems, you know, throughout the season scoring.
Well, we'll see what happens with them. I do think that they're, like we said, they're going to have to take advantage of at least one of those games that I listed. And obviously Boston College is a game that's in conference. But still, you look at the top of the ACC, wins are going to be hard to come by for Maryland. They're really going to have to take care of games against teams that are in their similar tier of squads. So we'll keep an eye on them. Let's jump over to Korea at Camp Humphreys Air Base. We had Oregon and Georgetown play, and, you know, Oregon came into this as the underdog. Georgetown, I think, was a top 15 KenPom team to start things off, and, God, I don't know what happened to Georgetown's defense in the offseason, but they allow 82 points on only 69 possessions for the Ducks. An excellent game out of Mike Moser, an excellent game out of Joseph Young offensively, and, you know, Georgetown struggled. I mean, they got a really great performance out of Joshua Smith, at least as far as his overall efforts on the offense. He had 4 offensive rebounds, 0 defensive rebounds, which is a little bit of an oddity. But just not enough scoring for Georgetown with the amount of points that they gave up. And Kyle, you know, obviously, you know, Georgetown, this has been kind of a standard bearer over time, but this looked like an NCAA tournament game for Georgetown, and that they just seemed ill-prepared for what they needed to do to come away with a victory, and it ended up hurting them down the stretch.
Yeah, and, you know, what's really alarming about this is Oregon was playing without their point guard, Dominic Artis, and
another starter, too.
Right? Yeah, and Ben Carter. Yeah, Ben Carter was also out for this game. So that's, I think, the most alarming thing for them is Oregon's, you know, backcourt firepower was out for this game, and they still surrendered, like you said, 82 points and 69 possessions. That's this is just not John Thompson type of defense. It's not John Thompson the fourth type of defense. It's really not a good start for Georgetown. If this is indicative of the kind of defense they're going to play, they're going to have some real problems because they don't have a lot of weapons, and they can't afford to be giving up 82 points in fewer than 70 possessions. So, you know, we'll use the same old qualifier. It's just one game, but it's not a very good one game, you know, if you're a Georgetown fan.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, David, where it's not a big loss in the grand scheme of things for this Georgetown squad. Obviously, I mean, they've got plenty of opportunities on their schedule, but this is one of their few intermediate level games out of conference. I mean, they've got to go to Kansas later on this non-conference portion of the schedule. They've got Michigan State on a neutral floor in February. Those are two really tough opponents, and really you get below that, and they've got a bunch of really middling opponents, if not worse than that. So, you know, not the greatest start for them, but on the flip side, a really positive start for Oregon.
Yeah, it really was. Now, you got to – I think it's at least worth mentioning, and I don't mean to make excuses, but this game is not your normal itinerary game. Like, you know, you don't play most games in Korea after an 18-hour flight each way at a military base. I mean, it was very, very different, but still, it counts just the same as any other game. It was a neutral floor game, and Oregon was shorthanded. And, again – at the beginning of the year, before we talked about it during the Big East preview and some others, we had labeled Georgetown as a fringe tournament team. I mean, they're not solidly in. We don't know a whole lot about them. And then when you learn they're taking on a shorthanded Oregon team and they can't go out there and beat them, I mean, I think that's a little indicative of them maybe not being a tournament team. They're going to struggle to get in. Now, they'll have other chances. They have those heavyweights, and the Big East will provide plenty of opportunities. But on the flip side, what does this say about Oregon? I mean, they went out there without 2 starters and beat a tournament-caliber team or a fringe tournament-caliber team in Asia. I mean, that's not easy to do. And if anything, does this suspension give Oregon more depth when they get those 2 guys back? I mean, I think Oregon really, really might come on strong this year. I mean, very good.
Let's put this in perspective, guys. This was the biggest non-conference win in Asia in college basketball in a long time. I mean, it's huge.
You sound like fake Joe Lenardi.
You know, it's going to have a little asterisk. I mean, when the tournament committee gets together in early March, I mean, this game is going to have a little asterisk by it. It's going to be so big. I mean, it's a really big accomplishment.
I mean, I will say this. I think that's funny. That's a good observation, Kyle.
Yes.
You know, Oregon just now at this point has to take care of business until mid-December because they have a string of really weak opponents. But they can do that, and this is the thing. You can schedule weak opponents if you win neutral site games against teams like Georgetown. You know, and they've still got some interesting teams on their schedule. They've got Mississippi on the road. They have Illinois, I think, in Portland. They've got BYU at home. And then they get into the Pac-12 schedule. You know, so if they could take care of business against those teams as well, they're going to be in really good shape going into the conference schedule. But to answer your question, David, yeah, I mean, look, I think at this point any sort of depth assistance is going to help this team. You know, and I think it's something that they need. And I think in the conference itself this season, there's enough good teams that you're just going to need, you know, as many hands on deck as possible. If you're Oregon, because I think that's been a problem for them in the past. Like, they really haven't had the consistent level of talent across the board on their roster to be able to do things night in and night out in the Pac-12.
Georgetown is just disappointed they couldn't play Kentucky in, like, Shanghai or something.
Yeah. That's, you know what, maybe next year on the schedule they'll get that one going. One other game I wanted to talk about of the big conference teams, and that was this Alabama-Oklahoma game. Now, both of these teams are kind of fringe tournament consideration squads, but I think most people, if you'd asked, would have said Alabama had a better chance of getting into the tournament than Oklahoma, simply because Oklahoma's lost several players. Alabama's in a weak, you know, they're in a weak conference. There's plenty of hay to be made there. Yet Oklahoma, 82 points on 67 possessions, you know, they beat Alabama by 9, 82-73. And I was just surprised at how exposed Alabama looked in this game. I mean, I don't think that they had a very good game at all. They shot terribly from the outside, but their defense was really the thing that was the most bothersome. If I'm an Alabama fan or somebody that's following the Crimson Tide, I don't know. I expected a better effort out of them, David.
Yeah, it really was kind of surprising. And Alabama's out of conference schedule and or performance has. What's hurt them in the past, I think. Oklahoma, again, a fringe tournament team, as you said. In order to prove that you're better than fringe tournament teams, you have to beat fringe tournament teams. Alabama didn't do it. And for a team that prides itself on its defense, which Alabama traditionally does, Oklahoma just ran all over them. I mean, it was kind of surprising. Again, I mean, it wasn't a poorly played game, but it isn't like Oklahoma just came in there and blew you away with how good they looked. I mean, Alabama just looked bad, really, especially in that second half. Now, again, they do have Wichita State. They do have Xavier. UCLA, Xavier. You know, the jury's still out on them, although they did look good last night. So they may have gotten the memo a little bit on out-of-conference schedule, and then they're going to have you know, Kentucky and some other chances in conference Florida, but this would have been a win of note. And if there's anything Alabama has struggled to get, they win the games that they're expected to win, but they don't get the wins against tournament caliber teams away from home. That's what has killed them. And again, when we do our mock committee, that's the biggest thing. You look at what have they done away from home, and there isn't much there. This was a chance for them to at least do something, and they didn't. So it is kind of disappointing.
Kyle, anything to add on Alabama or Oklahoma?
No, David actually took the words out of my mouth as far as it's amazing. You know, Anthony Grant is so hell-bent on focusing on defense. It's just amazing that's what let him down. And it's just too bad for Alabama fans because clearly this was the biggest event going on in Tuscaloosa this weekend.
It was. And, you know, I mean, the fan base is crushed. I mean, they just can't seem to get over it.
So, guys, before we move on, any other games from the last 3 days? Obviously, we've got some that we're going to get to, the L.A. teams and a couple of the huge upsets. But any other games that don't fall into those categories from this first weekend that you feel deserve special mention? Let me start with David on this.
Yes, in addition to editing out the part of Colorado, we're also going to have to edit out the part of Louisiana Tech.
Now tell everybody, for those who didn't see it, what happened to Louisiana Tech?
They got beat by St. Mary's, and they looked really bad doing it. They took bad shots, but they made up for it by playing bad defense. It was just an utterly disgusting second half of basketball.
It was a pretty bad second half of basketball. I mean, outscored by 9. And, again, I mean, you want to talk about good offensive performances. St. Mary's managed to score 83 points on 65 possessions, an offensive efficiency rating of 1.28, which is that's one of the better ones you'll see throughout the course of the year. And it's funny because Louisiana Tech, I think, they had opportunities in that game. They just couldn't put it together. I think that one's worth mentioning. And, there's still time for Louisiana Tech, obviously. But I was impressed with St. Mary's. I thought St. Mary's looked good. And these are all games that they need in this early portion of the schedule. They basically need to go undefeated through their entire home stretch before they get in to West Coast Conference play. But they're off to a pretty good start with that.
Yeah, and it was. And it was a game – Louisiana Tech did not play – they say that they tried, and I'm not going to say that they didn't try, but this was one of their better chances to get a win of note, and they failed. And they failed to such a degree that, say they win the rest of their out-of-conference games, or, with the exception of Oklahoma State, who's a little bit over their head, all they've really proven is that they can beat top 100 teams. And as we've seen in the past, that's not good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, games of note for you, or if you want to throw in a comment on that game, please go ahead as well.
Yeah, I've just got basically two games I want to point out real quick. The first, it's not really, I think we expected this to some degree, was Duke beating Davidson. But I was really, I've been, pretty high on Duke already, but I was really blown away with watching this Duke team. I mean, they've got so much firepower. Jabari Parker, I think we all knew he was going to be the real deal, but Rashad Suleiman looked great. Matt Jones looked great. Quinn Cook is a perfect point guard, complement for that system that they've got, for the personnel they've got. I was just really impressed with watching Duke. I thought that they looked like a bona fide, legitimate number one type team right now. And the other game, I'm going to bring this up. I know, Galen, you and I don't see eye to eye on this, but I was just ultra impressed with Nebraska. I was expecting huge things from FGCU this year, and maybe to some degree they're going to be a bit of a disappointment, but I do think watching this Nebraska team, I'm just ultra impressed with their athleticism this year. They look just 10 times better on offense. They were one of the worst offensive clubs in all of major conference basketball last year, but they've got a lot of weapons. They've got a couple transfers, a couple great freshmen, Ty Webster. I was just really impressed with this Nebraska team. I'm going to ask people to keep an eye on this team. I really think that this might end up being a bubble caliber team before it's all said and done.
They had a good start without question. Look, and I think Florida Gulf Coast is a shell of their former selves, and frankly, their former selves weren't even that great. You look at what they did last year. I mean, they were okay. They were in the top 100, but they weren't. That Florida Gulf Coast team was not a knockdown, dragout, squad for at least large portions of the non-conference season.
If by large portions you mean the season,
right? The season. I mean, they did finish with 21 wins in the regular season last year, but it was a middling team. I mean, they were at a middling offense, a middling defense. They just happened to catch fire two games in the NCAA tournament. But it was impressive. I agree. I think Nebraska, they're able to score 79 points on 65 possessions. That's unheard of for the Cornhuskers, I mean, in prior seasons. It's good to see them. And I thought their defense looked very good as well. Nebraska's got every chance in the world to put themselves in position going into conference play to be a contender. I mean, they've got, three games that are going to be tough games for them in the non-conference. I mean, they got UMass on a neutral floor, and I think they're in the Charleston Classic or something like
that. That's the game they play UMass, and if they win that, they get either UAB or New Mexico. Well, if they win or lose that, they get either UAB or New Mexico.
Right. And so they have an opportunity at some decent games there. They have Creighton on the road. They have Miami at home in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and that's looking like a pretty darn good draw at this stage. And then they've got Cincinnati on the road, which will be a tough task for them right before the end of the this calendar year. But let's see. I'm at this point. I'm in a wait and see mode with Nebraska. For their sake, I hope they do well. I hope all these idiots that spend all this time, bleeding about how we need Northwestern to get to the NCAA tournament. I'd rather they focused all their attentions on Nebraska. That's where they need the help a lot more than Northwestern does. Like that.
That's exactly right. Let's get Nebraska in there first.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's switch gears and talk about some of the other issues going on in college basketball. Again, folks, if you'd like to chime in, leave us a comment on the YouTube page. We can patch that in. We can show those comments live during the podcast. Or you can tweet at HoopsHD, and we'll be here to answer your questions throughout. Guys, a tough start to the season for the two coaches in Los Angeles, the two new coaches. We talked about them last week. Andy Enfield, of course, was the coach of the aforementioned Florida Gulf Coast squad, takes over at USC, and yeah, that didn't go too well in that first game for him, as they struggle against Utah State. They end up losing that contest 78-65. Now, this was a road game, obviously, but it just didn't look very good, and we knew this was going to be an issue because that USC, the USC team is not very good to begin with. From a talent perspective, it's going to take some time to build up. But then you also had 22nd-ranked UCLA. You know, they had an 11-point lead on Drexel at half, and they frittered almost all of it away. I mean, it looked like UCLA was in real danger of losing that game in the closing minutes. They end up pulling it out, but not the picture book start that I think either of those coaches wanted to get their tenure started, Kyle.
No, it wasn't. Obviously, to be fair to both of them, it's going to take some time for them to get their systems implemented, get the personnel to run the systems. Usually, it's a 2 or 3 year process, and I think, especially in a case like Andy Enfield, it's going to be at least 2 years for him. Because I mean, to play an up tempo, up and down type of style, it's you've especially got to work harder to get some people in place. I think under in Alford's situation. He's got some guys there already, and they did play. I actually thought Drexel was going to win this game, so I got to give UCLA some credit for playing pretty well for most of the game, but they just kind of got a little sloppy at the end. And I know that they had Kyle Anderson playing point, and I'm still a little skeptical at how that's going to work out. And I think that has certainly played a little role in them, squandering their lead like they did. But yeah, the end of that game was just very bizarre. It was a comedy of errors the last 2 minutes. Drexel certainly had some chances to win the game, and UCLA had plenty of chances to win it well before they did. But they also they did their best effort to lose it. So they've got some things to work on, obviously. But there is some talent there. They can do some damage, but it's going to have to be a lot better than it was Friday night.
You know, it's funny, David, because we look at this UCLA team, and I think we have a skewed idea of how they've been playing over the past few years. The offense was the big issue, I think, converting possessions in this Drexel game, and that's pretty much been par for the course for UCLA for a few years now. I mean, last year was not really that good of an offensive team. They were okay. I think they were 50th in adjusted offensive efficiency, but they had some real stink bomb games offensively last year. And it's just going to take some time to get these players moving in a different direction, it would seem.
Yeah, it will. And again, I actually kind of had a different take. I was more impressed with Drexel than I was disappointed in UCLA. Now, again, UCLA probably didn't play as well as they expected to or as well as a 22nd-ranked team. But when I look at this Drexel team that came in, went all the way out to L.A., is playing on the road against a ranked team, falls behind by 11, and then just battles. I mean, this Drexel team played so hard. They didn't always execute well, but the one thing they did, I mean, they hustled their way back into that game. It was it's not that UCLA played well or that Drexel did either, but they really, really wanted it more. I mean, they were at every loose ball. They were feisty on defense. I mean, and I think that's what I took away from it. Drexel needs to play better. They need to play smarter. But, man, they hustled. I mean, that was the biggest thing. And then when I look at the rest of Drexel's schedule, there's a lot of winnable games on there. This might be a good Drexel team.
I don't know. It's a little too much Bruiser Flint for my tastes.
In typical Bruiser Flint form, I'm sure they'll lose to Northeastern and James Madison along the way. But
that is a wide-open conference. I mean, Drexel is projected as the Colonial champion by two games. I mean, and Delaware lost their first game as well. I think that was a little bit of a surprise to people. So, look, I agree. I think Drexel's got plenty of chances to do well this season, and it was a promising effort for them. But I don't know, when I watched that game, to me it just looked a lot more like UCLA letting Drexel back in the game rather than necessarily Drexel fighting their way back in. Like, it just seemed like mental mistakes on UCLA's part, from my perspective at least. But anyway, it should be an interesting process, and UCLA's next contest, they will be taking on Oakland. And then they have a whole slate of just really, really bad games. I am curious to see what happens when they play Northwestern, Kyle. The way that those two teams' offenses sync up, that might be a low-scoring game. It'll be interesting to watch just for the curiosity of Steve Alford going up against Chris Collins.
Well, no, I will say this. If UCLA struggles to score points against Northwestern this year, they're going to have real problems because that Northwestern team is... it remains to be seen if Chris Collins gets that program turned around, but it's not going to happen this year. They're bad.
They are not good, and that's definitely going to be a struggle for them. Let's move on to our next topic, gentlemen. And again, folks, if you would like to chime in, tweet us at HoopsHD, or you can leave a comment on the YouTube page, and we'll be happy to get to those comments as we go along. So we're starting a new thing. We've talked about this in previous years when we were broadcasting on Crimson Cast. We want to have a list of games that we keep that have implications of one form or another. And there's one group of games that I really like to keep this list throughout the course of the year. I call it the WTF games, the games where the outcome is really just... maybe shocking is the wrong word, but just it's facepalm inducing. If you're a fan of these teams, or even if you're just a fan of basketball, and you're watching these results come across the bottom of the screen, if you love the small guy, these are great results because it means the small guy has generally done very well. So we had three games that I was able to ID over the weekend that would qualify for the WTF awards. Kyle, the first one, Northern Colorado knocking off Kansas State, a Bruce Weber special. Normally we have to wait a little bit in the season before we get a Bruce Weber special, but God bless him, he delivered early this season.
Yeah, nobody, and I mean nobody, beats the UNCO Bears in early November. It just can't be done. It would be easy for us to sit here and crow about this, seeing Bruce Weber year after year after year at Illinois, and we could talk about how
I think we
we could talk about how much we saw this coming a mile away, but I mean, it's like taking candy from babies, and I feel like we're beating a dead horse by talking about how predictable this was. I mean, I don't think any of us saw Kansas State losing to Northern Colorado on the first night of the season, but this is just, I mean, this is what K-State fans are in for, and it's funny because so many of them, I think, wanted to get rid of Frank Martin, and I mean, he left on his own accord, but I mean, there were a bunch that weren't happy with Frank Martin, and I never understood why that was, and I think that this is, it's time to face backs if you're a K-State fan. This is what you're left with. If you see a guy like Frank Martin leave, you're stuck with a guy like Bruce Weber. And, I don't see this marriage ending very well. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, David Griggs is breaking out the beam again. That's how bad that's probably how K-State fans feel right now.
Well, David, it's interesting how bad Kansas State was offensively in this game. I mean, they shot 40, 5% from two. They shot 2 for 19 from three. But you go down their starting lineup, nobody had an offensive rating of 100 or better. And 100 is basically a point per possession used, for those of you who aren't familiar. The only guy on their roster that got that was a guy that came off the bench, Wesley Iwundu, and he finished with 14 points. He was 5 for 6 from the field. He was 4 for 8 from the foul line. Nobody else showed up. Kansas State as a whole only scored 58 points on 67 possessions. That's a sub-0.9 offensive efficiency rating. Northern Colorado wasn't any better, but Northern Colorado shouldn't be better. I mean, you would expect them to struggle offensively on the road. I was really blown away at how badly Kansas State fared as far as their offense was concerned in this contest.
Yeah, it was surprising. I'm not going to say that I expected it because I didn't. And in fact, like on the Under the Radar podcast, this is not one of the games we talked about. But Northern Colorado has all five starters back. And, you know, they kind of did. There's reason to believe that Northern Colorado might win the Big Sky now. I mean, I thought it was going to be Weber. I really liked them. They did not look good against BYU. But this is a team, don't get me wrong, this is a team Kansas State should beat. I mean, it's disappointing that they didn't, and it's an indictment on Kansas State that they did not beat a team. But Northern Colorado might be one of those tough 13-14 seeds when it's all said and done.
Oh, fair enough. Let's move on to our second WTF game of the weekend. And it's everybody's darling from last year, the Miami Hurricanes, not starting off this campaign quite the way that they had expected to. We knew that Miami was going to struggle a bit. They lost so many pieces off of last year's team that won the ACC and was a two seed. But gosh, losing at home to St. Francis at the start of the year. I mean, obviously they did this last year. You know, they lost to Florida Gulf Coast, which we thought was a terrible loss, and maybe it wasn't a terrible loss after all. But there's no question that St. Francis is a much worse loss now than Florida Gulf Coast was last year. Again, this was a rock fight of the highest order or the lowest order, I guess you could say. Miami only scoring 62 points on 74 possessions. And really, I mean, outside of Donovan Kirk and maybe if you want to stretch Ryan Brown, they got nothing offensively in this game. And again, it was a matter of, you know, if St. Francis didn't play particularly well themselves, it's just Miami played bad enough that they ended up losing the game. And, you know, David, it's tough because Miami was a great story. We like seeing Jim Larrañaga do well. He's going to have a real, real uphill battle trying to get this team to respectability this season.
He will, and to put it in the perspective, this St. Mary, SFNY, St. Mary's, or St. Francis, I don't even know their name.
St. Francis.
St. Francis, I always call them SFNY. Kyle will tell me if that's what they like to be called or not. This is an abysmal team. Like, this is a team that wasn't good last year, and what few things were good about it are now gone. I mean, they're probably one of the bottom two or three teams in the Northeast Conference, whereas Gulf Coast was at least showing signs of life. This is a very, very, very bad loss. Yeah. Awful.
Yeah, it's not a good look for them by any means. 0 for 15 from three-point land in this game, Kyle. And, you know, it doesn't get harder necessarily for Miami, but you look at the squad at this stage, and it's hard to envision them winning very many games in the ACC. Now, obviously, they could get better as time goes by, and they probably will get somewhat better. But as tough as the ACC is this year, I mean, this team could struggle to win two or three games total in that conference.
Yeah, this is bad, and we saw. You know, the thing is, it's not that they had a great offense last year, but the thing is, you know, as much as they miss Reggie Johnson and their forwards that they had last year, when they were struggling to shoot, Shane Larkin was a weapon because they could just ball screen you to death, and Larkin was pretty much unstoppable on the ball screens. So they didn't have to have a great shooting night because Larkin could get to the rim at will, but they don't have that this year. I mean, without Larkin, they just don't have anybody that can make a play and beat you off the dribble, and they're going to have problems in the ACC because there's a lot of teams that can score, and this team can't. And I don't even know that they're going to be able to defend well enough to stay in a lot of games. So this is going to be an ongoing problem. I don't see this team getting much better by the end of the year because they just don't have the weapons.
Yeah, and it's really not fair that they have to play a game like this right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, Leo, start them off with Chicago State or somebody
right,
like that,
yeah.
Or Northern Kentucky.
Or
St.
Francis,
I mean,
PA.
Yeah.
Or SFPA. I mean, that would have been...
By the way, that is one thing I wanted to mention. I've always known St. Francis, PA, and St. Francis, New York. We've always known those two schools. They're both named St. Francis, and we're fine with that. ESPN, on their graphic overlays, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they were referring to them as St. Francis, Brooklyn, not St. Francis, New York. Now, I know where Brooklyn is, but do we need that extra layer of confusion? I mean, is that necessary?
I've always called them SFNY. I mean, that's just who they are,
right.
SFNY.
Quit complicating things, ESPN. Just leave it as it is. All right, we were happy with the last 20 years. We've been good with St. Francis, New York. Just leave it as that. Now, you know what? I did say just a minute ago that Miami might struggle to win more than two or three games. The reason that the number is that high, as far as the ACC is concerned, is because they have Virginia Tech in their conference as well, who is the owner of our third WTF game of the week. They lose yesterday to USC Upstate, 64-63. Not quite as much of a rock fight. Virginia Tech at least got close to a point per possession. But, man, this was just an unfortunate game all the way around. Virginia Tech, not a whole lot's expected out of them this year. But USC Upstate, I mean, I guess, you know, if you want to take the Pomeroy ratings, I guess technically USC Upstate is considered a better team than Virginia Tech, at least coming into the season.
They are a better team.
Well, but I would say the thought of them going into Blacksburg and being able to pick up a victory, that's a bit more than I was expecting out of this USC Upstate team.
Yeah, I'm petitioning for this game to be removed from the WTF list because, you know, if there's any footage left that David Griggs hasn't edited out from our preseason podcasts, I think somewhere in there we were singing the praises of USC Upstate. I'm not sure. He may have erased the whole thing due to, you know, incorrect predictions. But, you know, I like this USC Upstate team. They've got two or three really good players. Torrey Craig is an excellent scorer. You know, in addition to Craig, they've got a guy named Ty Green. It's an explosive guard. You know, he was 6 of 9 shooting the other night. This actually was not surprising to me. I actually thought they were a better team than Virginia Tech, and I was not at all surprised to see them win the game. So yeah, to me, this wasn't really that much of a surprise. I thought Virginia Tech was bad, and I was kind of, you know, going to be surprised if they ended up winning the game.
Fair enough.
I mean, and that was another thing. I mean, if anything, it was, I think Upstate made it harder on themselves than what it had to be. And this was a conversation we were having during the game yesterday. It's just, if you want to consider yourself a good team, then you have to beat bad teams on the road, and Virginia Tech is a bad team.
Yeah.
And really, Upstate was, they didn't even play well. I mean, they had chances to put it away and didn't. They didn't, I mean, their defense wasn't that good. They took some really ill-advised shots. I mean, if anything, even though they won, when you go back and look at the tape, there's a lot to work on. And, I just mean that this is a very, very bad Virginia Tech team.
Yeah, they are, and I guess maybe the WTF in this is, how is Virginia Tech this bad at this stage?
Fair point.
It's the loss of Seth Greenberg.
We laugh, but it kind of is. I mean, you know, they won 13 games last year. They're not off to a great start this season. For many years, yeah, I look at it kind of the way I look at Wisconsin. Like, we look at Wisconsin now as a top team in college basketball, a top five team in the Big Ten every year. People forget that as recently as, you know, the late 80s, Wisconsin was the graveyard shift of the Big Ten. I mean, it was a terrible team. I mean, it was they weren't worse than Northwestern, but they were close.
Oh, I think they may have been. They were bad.
Northwestern's, they've been significantly worse, I think, even than Wisconsin. It was close, but I still, regardless, we've gotten spoiled by the Bo Ryan era and the Dick Bennett era before that. And I feel that way with Virginia Tech. Like, we've kind of taken it for granted that at the very least Virginia Tech's going to be in competition for NIT bids, if not making it to the NCAA tournament. And Seth Greenberg deserves the credit for that because he was able to do stuff there that other people hadn't been able to do in the past. That's gone now, and I think, you know, the backslide that Virginia Tech is going to be undertaking is going to surprise some people who have only known them as being a team that's, you know, kind of a fringe tournament squad over the past decade.
I'm nostalgic, but I really do miss them being on their rightful place, on their rightful spot on the bubble.
Outside the bubble. On it, but outside of it, it was great.
I mean, the play-in game for the at-larges was basically tailor-made for Virginia Tech, and I just feel bad that they're not going
to
be in it.
Yeah, they changed the rules to get Virginia Tech in, and now it's not going to matter. Nah, it's just it's too bad.
It's a travesty what's going on with this game. Anyway, so let's move forward as we wrap up the show. We got about 10 minutes left, and again, if you got any comments, folks, tweet us at HoopsHD, and you can even do that during the week. I know some of you are not watching the live podcast, you're listening to us in recorded version, but you know, please tweet us. We'll always answer questions, and we will do a show, I think, on Wednesday of this week. That's going to be our normal rotation. We do a show on Sunday nights and a show on Wednesday nights as we try to keep you up with what's going on in basketball. But let's talk a little bit about the games we've got over the next few days, as we've got some pretty good games coming up, guys. Tomorrow, four games that I wanted to highlight, and if you've got others you want to throw in there, let me know. And I'm not going to go through these all individually, but I did want to mention that they were coming up for people who weren't aware. And, you know, feel free to chip in and give us your thoughts on any of these. But Belmont travels to Richmond. I think that'll be kind of a unique game. Two teams that are kind of in the same vein in terms of where they are in the hierarchy of college basketball. And Richmond's a team that some people have talked about as maybe being a stealth choice to compete in the Atlantic 10. You've got Long Beach State at Arizona. Now, that's probably not going to be that competitive a game, but I'm still not completely sold on Arizona, and I think Long Beach State's going to provide at least somewhat of a challenge for them. You've got Akron at St. Mary's, which
that's a good one.
That's going to be, I think, a pretty good game to follow. And then BYU traveling to Stanford. Stanford was a team that struggled in their first game this season. Johnny Dawkins is under some heat there, and I think deservedly so. And BYU, I think, could give them some issues. Any thoughts on those games, guys, or any that you'd like to throw in as far as the Monday set's concerned? David, let me start with David.
Who's BYU got?
They're at Stanford.
That's a big one, too. I mean, I don't know. That's the one I'm most interested in because, again, it's two teams that we don't know much about. BYU looked good the other night against what I thought was a good Weber State team, but BYU typically plays well at home. Their Achilles heel last year was road games, and it'll be interesting to see what they can do against an up-and-coming Stanford team, so that's one that I'll be watching for sure.
All right, Kyle?
Yeah, I just have, like, Arizona, I will say I don't expect this to be a very close game, but on the other hand, if they play like they did against Cal Poly Friday night, Long Beach State may well get them because it's, you know, Long Beach State is probably going to be a better club than Cal Poly, and they sure struggled to put Cal Poly away. I don't expect them to lose this game, but if they play like they did Friday night, they might.
Keep in mind with BYU, folks, that this team was in the NIT last year, were they not?
Yes.
You know, and they lost to Baylor in the semifinal of the NIT, only by 6. I mean, they had a nice run out. They beat Washington. They beat Mercer. They went on the road, and they beat Southern Miss handily. Mm-hmm. They had some pretty good overall results last year. I mean, they had a couple of bad losses that kept them out of the NCAA tournament, including that loss to San Diego in the West Coast Conference tournament. But I like what they bring to the table more than what Stanford's bringing to the table right now. And it was Bucknell that Stanford played over the weekend, and they only won by 4. So, you know, Bucknell is a pretty good team, but BYU's significantly better than Bucknell.
They are, especially with Bucknell losing a lot. Now, the midnight game, are you counting that as tomorrow or the next day? Wichita State, Western Kentucky.
I was actually counting that as tomorrow. That's obviously going to be a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one to keep in mind.
Midnight is technically Monday.
Yeah, it is technically Monday.
Well,
that's true.
Well, not where I'm at.
Well, that's a fair point, actually. He does have a point there, Kyle.
Okay.
We're debating time zones now. But anyway.
Great television. We're debating time zones.
Midnight on the East Coast, yes. Anyway, Tuesday games. We've got several. Of course, you've got, and let's just sit and talk about these for a second, the two big games up in Chicago. Michigan State and Kentucky, and then Kansas against Duke. Kyle, who do you have winning these two games and why?
Michigan State, because I think they're a better team right now, and I think because it's unfair to Kentucky. and I think Duke is just going to blow the doors off of Kansas. I think that, you know, Kansas is got a long way to go. You know, Andrew Wiggins is a great player, but I don't think he's Jabari Parker right now, and I don't think the Kansas supporting cast is equipped to handle Duke's backcourt. So I think Duke and Michigan State both win handily. Now, I think the Michigan State game is going to be a little closer than, you know, than the Duke-Kansas game, but I do think Michigan State will pull away. I think Duke is going to rock Kansas.
David, let me get your picks on those games real quick. I'll also give mine, but go ahead.
Okay, I don't have a reason why, but as much as I like to make fun of John Calipari, he's not a stupid man.
True.
I think he is doing this. I think this is tactful, and it kills me to praise him for something and then admit that I don't understand what he's doing, but I think that he's doing something. I think Kentucky gets Michigan State. And I agree. I just think November, Duke always comes out. They play like a brutal gauntlet schedule, and they always went through it. They're one of the best November teams in history, really. I think they beat Kansas. They looked great the other night. And I know Davidson is not anywhere near as good as a lot of the teams out there, but they're not bad either. And Duke just bulldozed them.
Yeah, I mean, I like Michigan State. I think that they're going to be – that's a team that's going to be ready. I think they're looking to make a statement to start the season off, and I think you're right, Calipari's not an idiot, but I also think if Calipari's already making excuses, then he's got some concerns about the game. I'm going to pick Kansas. I don't really have a good reason why. I mean, I was impressed with the way that Duke played against Davidson, but I also, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal in the big scheme of things, I don't think. I think both Kansas and Duke will be excellent throughout the course of the season, but I'll go with Kansas in this game, mostly because it's better radio if somebody disagrees and doesn't take Duke. Other games,
right.
Yes. other games of note, we've got Florida, Wisconsin, guys. Florida did not look good playing against North Florida. They really did not, and a lot of that was them being shorthanded.
Did look good against St. John's.
In Wisconsin, I've got that game DVR'd. I'm watching it tomorrow morning. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but the statistics look good for them. I'm curious to see what happens in this game, obviously, because Wisconsin didn't fare very well against Florida last year when they played them. With arguably a less talented cast, or at least a significantly different cast this year, I am curious to see what they're able to do.
Folks, I want to make this point. I made this in the email thread. If you want proof that college basketball's new rule changes are good for the game, Wisconsin and St. John's combined on 161 points the other night on Friday. So Wisconsin basketball in a game scoring 161 points, you know college basketball's on the right track.
Yes, absolutely. We might be able to salvage the game yet. Other games of note, North Carolina State traveling to Cincinnati. This is mostly of note because I want to see how bad exactly NC State is this year. And I think, I mean, Cincinnati's obviously got a very good chance of making the NCAA tournament. This is the sort of game they're going to need to win. VCU at Virginia. That's going to be a fascinating contrast to styles, David. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yes. Oh, and you just said it. Fascinating contrast of styles between two very good teams that are well coached and good at those styles. It's a great game.
The stoppable force meets the movable object.
That's correct.
And you throw in the regional rivalry aspect, because this is a game VCU's wanted for a while and now they got it. So
we've also got a couple of other games of note. We've got Tennessee traveling to Xavier. And again, this is one of those games where I think we're curious as to how good both of these teams are. I mean, Tennessee is a squad that a lot of people are pointing at and saying, hey, this team could make the NCAA tournament. Not as many people are doing that with Xavier, but some are. And let's be honest, the Big East at this point looks pretty wide open. So it'll be interesting to see how those two teams match up against one another. And then the last one that I had written down, Denver at California. We've talked about
great
Denver
game.
Potentially winning their conference. Cal is one of those teams that's in the mix as far as the Pac-12 is concerned. I don't know. I mean, I always like watching Denver. I find them to be pretty entertaining. Kyle, any thoughts from you on that?
Yeah, no, I'll say this. If if Friday and Saturday is any indication on the Pac-12, then we need to do a lot more editing on our Pac-12 podcast, because we were singing the praises of that league, and they certainly didn't look very good, you know, out of the gate. This Denver game is going to be very tricky for Cal.
Can I just mention in that vein before I let you talk, David, right now, for those of you who are Pac-12 network enabled, switch to it immediately, because with a minute 42 left, Coppin State is leading Oregon State 70-66.
I'm missing it.
And,
well, anyway, I can't go
back. Our friend Lee Delvecchio just chimed in by email a few minutes ago, but seriously, how fired is Craig Robinson?
just to give you a sense of how bad this would be if they lost this game, Coppin State is 308th in the Pomeroy ratings to start the season. They won 8 games last year, and the best team that they beat was probably Towson. So that should really give you an idea of the issues that would be presented here if Coppin State somehow managed to knock off Oregon State.
Yeah, well, just getting back real quick, this is a Denver team that I think will make the NCAA tournament, and the reason I think they'll make it is because they're good enough to go to Cal and win. Now we'll see if I'm right or if we'll have to edit that podcast too.
Well, you know, I do think as far as as far as Denver's concerned, this is the perfect sort of game for them.
It is.
Because they don't, if they lose, everybody expected them to lose, and it's not going to hurt their at-large resume. This is their first game of the season, and it's funny because they travel to Cal, and then they have Stanford at home 5 days later.
Yes.
They could have just stayed in the Bay Area and saved everybody
now,
the business.
If they get both of these, and I think they might, I mean, are they the feel-good story right out of the gate nationally?
I think it's too early to say. You may be right. The problem you run into with them is that they've almost got too tough of a schedule. They have Cal on the road, Stanford at home, Harvard on a neutral floor, and I think they're in a tournament there.
Yes.
They've got Mercer on the road. They've got Colorado State on the road. They've got Belmont at home, and they travel to UTEP.
UTEP's bad, but
and they travel to St. Joe's. Well, UTEP's not that bad. UTEP, we talked about them winning Conference USA outright. They're not that bad.
Well, it is
Conference. Ending with faint praise.
Well, I'm saying at the very least, they're on the same level as Denver. I mean, I think we can give them that, can't we? 70-68 right now. By the way, Coppin State only up 2. On Oregon State at this stage. We're going to have to sign off before that finishes off. But any other games from these first couple of days of the week leading into Wednesday that you guys would like to talk about before we close off? David, let me start with you.
I think you hit most of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, the Denver one is the one that I'm most excited about. I'm a little curious to see if Western Kentucky has anything, just going back to their game at Wichita State tomorrow night at midnight if you're on the East, so...
All right, Kyle.
Yeah, no, I think you hit all the interesting ones. I'm a little interested. I will say, and I don't think that they play anybody this week, but I want to kind of say I'm interested to see how Notre Dame continues to look, because they've been pretty impressive in their first two wins so far.
Oh, okay.
And normally I'm not very bullish on any Notre Dame team, but this one I'm kind of curious to see if they can keep it up.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a good point. And
I got to mention one more. Wright State at Georgetown, a Wright State team that you kind of talked about earlier on.
Yeah.
This is their one and only shot at a quality win.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what they do.
Actually, there's one other that I'd like to note. VMI travels to Wake Forest. Now, if Wake Forest somehow loses that game, does Jeff Bizdelic make it out of the arena?
Oh, sure.
They're everybody's up in arms, and like all 9 Wake Forest fans are really irritated about this situation. If you haven't done any reading on it, folks, you definitely should. It's a fascinating situation. It smacks of cronyism and just guys being given jobs that they probably didn't deserve and then getting to keep them because changing it would be an admission of failure on the part of the athletic director. Really interesting stuff, and I'm curious. I mean, VMI... They're VMI. They just do what they do, and that's about it. But they are 2-0 at this point. They won both their games in the military class.
Every VMI game is the same. They're going to trap you. They're going to let you get an easy layup, and then they're going to shoot a three on the other end. Yeah. That's a BMI game for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, well, that'll wrap up this edition of the Bracket Racket. We really appreciate
you. Three quick shout-outs, Galen.
Yes, hold on. Yes, go ahead. And your shout-outs first from David Griggs.
Okay, we've got three websites that I got to mention. One is warrennolan.com. It's a great statistical and analytical site, not just for college basketball, but all college sports. Another one, basketballforum.com. I've always thought message boards in general were cesspools of stupid. This is a very good one, not just for college basketball, but all basketball. And then CSNBBS.com, College Sports Network Bulletin Board Systems. Not just basketball, but all college sports. Another non-cesspool of stupid basketball and college sports in general site. So check those out. And, of course, HoopsHD.com.
Of course, absolutely.
These messages brought to you by David Griggs.
Yes.
And David Griggs Promotional Services. We,
yes.
We have
six Twitter followers.
We do appreciate everybody tuning in, and hopefully if you're getting a chance to listen or watch this after the fact, hopefully you find it enjoyable. You can send us your comments. Again, just tweet us at HoopsHD. You can also, on the YouTube feed, if you're watching this on the YouTube video version, just leave a comment. We'll go back. We'll look at the comments. Feel free to ask questions, make comments. If you got suggestions for improvement, things you'd like to see us cover next time, we'll be happy to do it. Same thing if you're listening in on the podcast, just tweet at us. It's the best way to get a hold of us. Just one quick update before we sign off. Coppin State with 19 seconds remaining is now up 75-70. It looks like Fang Mitchell is going to pull another one off here, guys. You can't sleep on Fang Mitchell.
No.
Boy, the Eagles are an unstoppable force here early in the season.
Oregon State just missed their shot. 8.7 seconds left. Coppin State's going back to the line. Adios,
Miak,
Beavers. Adios, Miak. Beavers. Miak power. I love it. Anyway, for David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavia. This has been the Bracket Racket on HoopsHD.com. Tune in on Wednesday. We'll have the live link when the time comes. More college basketball talk as we launch the 2013-2014 season. We'll catch you folks on the flip side. So long, everybody.